I'd like to read to you some words that were written by a woman interviewer of a modern politician. The text, there are some minor things which are left out, but you'll get the gist. Our demands are practical conclusions which we have drawn from burning needs, the shameful humiliation of women, defenseless and without right. We demonstrate thereby that we recognize these needs and are sensible of the humiliation of the woman and the privileges of man. That we hate, yes, hate everything, and we will abolish everything which tortures or oppresses the woman worker, the housewife, the peasant woman. It wins us the confidence of the masses of women who feel themselves exploited, enslaved, and suppressed by the domination of man, by the power of the employer, and by the whole of society. Could there be a more damning proof of this than the calming acquiescence of men who see how women grow worn out in the petty, monotonous household work, their strength and time dissipated and wasted, their minds growing narrow and stale, their hearts beating slowly, their will weakened? The home life of the woman is a daily sacrifice to 1,000 unimportant trivialities. In law, there is naturally complete equity of rights for men and women. And everywhere there is evidence of a sincere wish to put this equality into practice. We are bringing women into the special economy, into legislation and government. All educational institutions are open to them so that they may increase their professional and social capabilities. That will mean freedom for the woman from the old household drudgeries and dependence on man. That enables her to exercise her full talents and her inclinations. The children are brought up under more favorable conditions than formerly. This sounds like a modern-day feminist, but in point and fact, it was Vladimir Lenin, the communist leader, interviewed by Clara Zetkin. And it is a fact that feminism, actually in its historical root in this country, actually has a direct connection to communism. You can read E. Michael Jones' book, Libido Dominandi, to see that. And they have something in common. They have the same trajectory. That is, to take children away from the proper formation which women give them in the household. Our Lady of Fatima said that Russia would spread her errors, and she did not merely refer to economic and political matters. It also refers to matters of the home. Women and men, for that matter, should quit looking to themselves and their disordered appetites for what will make them happy. And here we're thinking of the feminists. They must look to God. St. Thomas Aquinas says that happiness is of one of two kinds, either perfect or imperfect. Perfect happiness is in heaven alone. Imperfect happiness is of two kinds. The first is the life of contemplation, for example, prayer, the considerations of truths, and things of this sort. And the second is the life of moral virtue, because for a person leading a morally good life, God begets him a certain happiness. Moral virtue is a perfection of the various faculties of man. And that perfection is not of any kind whatsoever, but of the very nature of the faculty itself. And what that means is that the virtue perfects the structure, the very design of the faculty. God has designed men and women and their faculties to function in very specific ways. This is called a natural inclination. And sometimes it's by degree. Some people find these inclinations stronger than others. And these natural inclinations are always towards the good. And these conglomeration of inclinations, which God writes into the very structure in the heart of man, is called the natural law. We know what God's will is. We know what will make us happy just by looking at the way he designed us. And men and women are structured and designed differently, and it is by divine intention. Common sense and experience tells us that. All you have to do is look at them. You know they behave differently. They're designed, they're structured different biologically. They're psychologically different. Modern studies are even telling us this. Although, I don't quite understand why we need a modern study when everybody in the past, just through common sense, could just look at and see. But that's where we're at today. But there's a modern study, for example, that shows that women listen to many things at once. That is, their concentration is designed to cover a multitude of things, but superficially. Whereas men are designed to focus on one thing at a time and tune everything else out. This is why a guy can sit in front of the television and flip the channels, and his wife can come up and talk to him, and he doesn't even hear it. I mean, she's not even in his scope of focus. But it's also a necessary thing for women. And men needed it too, because men need to be able to focus. Like, for instance, when they go to war, they have to be able to tune everything out and focus on the task at hand. Women, on the other hand, were not designed that way. They were designed to be able to listen to a number of things at once. And that's because they have to be able to, when they're taking care of one child, be able to have a kind of grasp of what's going on with what the other children are doing. How men are structured and how women are structured is evident at the creation of Eve. Their fall and St. Paul's remedies, which he gives, we see there's a certain psychology built into it, of the which deal with the particular defects that we all have. In the creation of Eve, as soon as God created Eve and presented her to Adam, Adam knew no other thing was like Eve. That is, he saw her immediately and recognized she had the same nature. And that's because of that same nature, she had the same dignity because of the same nature. Eve was presented by God to Adam. And therefore, God gave Eve a natural inclination to be concerned about her prayer and her appearance. It's not a disorder for women to be concerned about their appearance. It's a disorder when it becomes excessive. And it's also appropriate for women to do that because by worrying about their appearance and those things that stand around them, women are able to provide a home life and a disposition of the home life which is comfortable and pleasant to all of us. But it cannot go to excess. At the same time, God placed in Adam a natural inclination to accept his wife. It was Adam's place to judge her suitability. In other words, God presented Eve to Adam for his judgment. And this was a sign that Adam had to accept his wife, but it also meant that it was Adam's place to rule his wife. Now, we'll see how that works itself out, but that was part of it. At the fall, Satan went after Eve. Because women are more ordered towards the emotional life. This is not a disorder per se. Or what we say, I should say, we say essentially speaking. And what that means is that women are more ordered to the emotional life because it's necessary for women to be able to empathize with children to direct their emotional and psychological development. For instance, if a man was in charge of the children all of the time, if the child falls down, the guy, because it's a part of a condition of a male to deal with things that are difficult and just to ignore them to continue to pursue what the right is, when he sees the child fall down, scraped up, most men will realize, okay, intellectually I got to take care of the child, but they don't empathize with the child, and they may even just say, oh, suck it up, deal with it. Whereas the child, when they're younger, when men get older, of course, they need that type of direction from men, but when children are younger, they actually need for the woman to empathize so the child recognizes that this is a sorrowful thing that's happened, but at the same time, direct it to the right end. And that's why women have a more of an emotional life. But this is one of the reasons why Satan tried to appeal to Eve first, rather than Adam. Because he knew if he could get Eve, he could undo Adam. But the emotional life, there was an appeal by Eve looked at the apple and saw that it was pleasing. Satan presented her to it in this way. And because Eve gave in to her appetite regarding the apple, the punishment fit the crime. In other words, after the fall, principally because of biological and chemical things, but the punishment from original sin is that the emotional life of women would be harder to maintain. This is why a virtuous woman is something to behold, because the emotional life is more stable. The emotional life of a woman is more intense for the sake of helping the children not to control her husband and not to the husband to be the object of all her emotions. It's not meant for dominating or manipulating her husband to get her emotions satisfied. Eve ate the apple, and in this she broke her submission from the natural law to Adam. She should have went to Adam first and said, you know, should we eat this? Because she knew it was going to affect them both. And again, the punishment fit the crime. Because she broke her submission to Adam, she would now, until the end of time, have this disorder from original sin to want to get away from his legitimate authority. And she would even resent it. And this resentment, this disorder, is what the feminist movement plays upon. Eve then gave the apple to Adam. She then sought to manipulate Adam and to control him. And that's what she's doing. She's like, here, eat the apple. She already knew that she had committed the sin, but she's giving it to Adam to try and get him to do what she wants. rather than letting him do the right thing. And so the punishment fit the crime. God said to her, your desire shall be for your husband. If you tried to control him, then in the end, you're going to struggle against trying to control him. And it also meant that women will have a stronger desire for marriage. And that's because marriage is more integral to feminine nature and to psychology, because their whole nature is ordered towards the begetting and rearing of children. And so it's much more integrated into their psychology, whereas men aren't as ordered in that way. They're ordered to it somewhat to having children, but they're also ordered towards working and toiling and things of this sort. But in trying to control Adam, Adam would resent Eve and become cold because he's trying to control him. And all the guy wants is peace. So very often you see men give into this temptation. All they want is peace. And so they'll let their wife do whatever they want. Or they'll just do what their wife says, rather than tending to her real psychological needs. Adam accepts the apple, and the punishment fit the crime. Because Adam let his wife take the lead, forever he would be fighting to maintain his own authority. And also, he in the end, was effeminate. Why? St. Thomas defines effeminacy as an unwillingness to be separated from from one's pleasures in order to pursue the arduous or difficult good. Adam was unwilling to turn away from the pleasures of having his wife in order to pursue the arduous good, which was to be faithful to God's command. And this is one of the biggest temptations of modern man today. That is, they just let women run roughshod over them because they don't want to fight the fight, because they don't want to engage with arduous. It is this fact. It is the fact that men have become effeminate as to why the feminist movement has made so much advance. It is the dismantling of the family is due to men more so than women. The problem is going to be laid at their feet at the final judgment, because it's their place to assume the authority to exercise it properly. Now, some would say, well, you know, men dominate women. This is precisely why our Lord warns people with authority. If you don't use it as he intended, then you will have to stand before him and everyone else at the final judgment and make an accounting of it. He's going to be exacting a very heavy toll to men for A, not assuming the authority if they don't assume it, and B, if they abuse it. And this authority that the man has over the household is not for his own benefit. Let's get that clear. It's ordered towards the spiritual and physical welfare of his family. That's what it's for. As a result, when a man assumes responsibility, that's how he practices self-denial. What are St. Paul's remedies for this? St. Paul says that women must be submissive to their husbands. And this is a fulfillment of the divine precept. And it's a divine precept. God himself. Scripture is inspired. It's God telling us that women must be submissive to their husbands. Not because they should be subservient or treated poorly. Quite the contrary. They're submissive to their husbands in order to help him to have proper order in the family. And so that he can exercise his authority. There's a natural inclination in men that when they see that a woman wants to submit in a rightly ordered way, that he naturally will be inclined to govern her and the family for the sake of leading them to their proper end. Because women are more affected by the emotional life, and again, this emotional life is a perfection, not the defect, the excess, but the perfection of helping children through the emotional life. But when it goes to excess, it's because of that is one of the reasons why God put men over the head of their house. Now, that doesn't mean that some men are more emotional than women. It just means that by structure, God designed men for one thing and women for another. If men are acting that way, that means that they're not acting like men. To fulfill the natural law, this submission is a natural inclination in women. They're not going to be happy. They will not be virtuous until they submit. It's that simple. The appetite to dominate their husband comes from original sin. It's a disorder. And women, I've seen it every time, the happiest, most virtuous women I've ever seen are the ones who actually desire to see their husband rule and govern the family properly. Husbands must love their wives. That's what God tells us through St. Paul. Men must not allow themselves to go cold to their wife, because if they do, guess what? She's going to try and dominate you. Why? Because, again, her desire is for her husband. And if she desires her husband, the husband must reciprocate in proper love and the proper affections that are proper to the married state. If he doesn't, then this natural inclination of women to receive these things becomes frustrated, and then she becomes frustrated, and then she becomes angry and bitter as time goes on. If your wife is bitter when she's older, you might consider looking at yourself if you're her husband. God also told us through St. Paul that men must treat their wives as Christ treats his church. The husband's principal obligation is to help his wife save her soul, not just give in to her so she'll be quiet. She will not save her soul if you are not a man and take responsibility and governance of the home. Women have a natural inclination, as I mentioned, towards submission. And again, they're not going to be happy until that inclination is fulfilled through virtue. There is a general principle, and I tell this to men. It applies to women, too. I mean, they can apply it to how they deal with their husbands. I told this guy one time, because he went and bought a house, and I said, that was a mistake. And he said, why? Isn't it listed to please your wife? I said, yeah, it is. But you forgot something. You never give your wife what she wants. You always give her what you know will make her happy. And sometimes those are the same, sometimes they are not. And the same thing applies to the husband. You don't give in to his effeminacy and lack of willing to take control of the household. It's his responsibility, you make him take it. Feminism, therefore, has caused a tremendous amount of damage because it's subverted this whole order and it's making women miserable. But it's also very dangerous because feminism promotes injustice. Children have a natural law right to be raised by both parents. And they have this right because of the fact that children need both parents psychologically. Now, obviously, if something happens, for instance, the husband is killed or the wife has to separate because the husband isn't doing his job or whatever, he's abusing her or things like that, those can be listed reasons. And God will supply for her through grace what is lacking in nature. But the child generally has a right to be raised by both parents because they need both parents. Modern studies are showing this more and more. And so what this means is that the child has a moral right to this intellectual formation. And the fulfillment of this right is incumbent on the woman to stay home unless it's absolutely necessary. This is a divinely established task for the woman, that is, taking care of children, as God said to Eve regarding her new labor pains. This is what your job is now. The husband has a right that the woman fulfill her domestic responsibilities. He has to work, and therefore he cannot take care of the home and of the children all the time. And so she must be his helper. In fact, this right of the children is so grave because it has such a profound impact on the moral formation of children and therefore their salvation, that it is a mortal sin for a woman to work outside the home without a sufficient reason. Now, think of what that means. Think of the injustice. We all worry about all the other injustices that are occurring in our society, but women are constantly doing this in relationship to their children. Not all women, of course. Many women are very faithful to their obligations. Taking care of children and the home is by no means a trivial task. Lenin was a nut. He didn't understand these things. He doesn't understand these functions. He rejected the natural law because he rejected God. G.K. Chesterton said that he could never understand why women wanted the vote. Now, putting aside whether women should have the vote or not, the rest of this is quite apt. He says he could never understand why women wanted the vote because a woman could make or break an entire nation by the way she raised a single child. A single child. Hitler, Stalin, Lenin. You can go down the whole litany, or look on the side of the men that were virtuous and led whole countries through the worst of times. For example, which we see in England during the Second World War. So it is possible that a woman can have a far greater impact on the society by the way she raises her children than going to work, or even voting in a certain sense. That even applies to men. Women are not designed for work. God didn't design them for that. Now, they may have to because they may be single and, those need supplies. Or if the husband is incapable of supplying, they may have to. But if there's not a sufficient reason, for instance, if you're not going to starve, you're not going to lose the home, then she shouldn't be working. She should be staying home with the children. And it also, this is an important thing because aside from the things that we've mentioned, because it shouldn't be taken trivially. I mean, for instance, if a woman goes to work because they want the second VCR and the second boat and the second house and things like that, it's disordered. And this applies for children from the time of their birth until the time of majority. After that, whatever the parents give to the child is gratuitous. In the sense of, for instance, children, there's a notion today that women have to go out and work because children need a college education. The husband, the family is not responsible for the children once they get to the age of majority. Once they become the age of majority, they become their own man and they become their own woman. And from that point on, they're responsible for themselves. If the parents help them out, that's fine. But a woman cannot go to work and neglect her other children at home to put someone else through college. Women have certain perfections which men lack in taking the care of children. And these are true perfections. They're noble and they're good. And therefore, but men also have perfections, and we cannot thwart them. Feminism demands that women be demeaned, that their function, who they are, and what they're designed for is demeaned, as Lenin said. He says, oh, it's trivial. No, it's not. It's a noble, it's a wonderful thing. Feminism is a rejection of the divinely established plan regarding the natural law. And feminism does not exhort virtue, particularly justice to children. Children need their mother. Children at daycares and children raised properly at home are like night and day. Again, if it's a real need and the woman has no choice, that's one thing. But when people sit there and say the children who go to daycares are more socially adjusted, that's trash. Everybody knows it's not true, and even the modern studies are showing that it's not. If there is a grave reason, then people who have to put their children in daycare, if there's a grave reason, should not feel guilty. Sad, maybe, but not guilty. Because they're trying to fulfill their other obligations. Because they have to provide for the child. I mean, there's no point in staying home and letting it starve to death. You have to take care of it. And so these grave reasons can be economic, but they can also be social. For example, if there's a grave illness of one of the parents or something like this, and the only way to take care of it would be the woman may have to stay temporarily outside the home or things like this. If women are not married, again, then working may be necessary. Feminism has stripped women of their right. It's a right for a woman to be able to remain at home. It's a right for a woman to expect her husband to go out and earn a living for her. Now, he may not be able to for a variety of different conditions, but she has a right for him to try that. Because now there's also another problem. Because there's too many women in the working force, there's a glut of workers. And as a result, some women are forced to work because their husbands can't make enough money because the salaries are too low because, again, there's a glut of workers, supply and demand. Feminism demeans the holy family, which is the exemplar. And women simply will not be happier until they follow the example of Our Lady. And men until they follow the example of St. Joseph, and children until they're obedient and submissive to their parents. Grace builds on nature. The natural law has ordained the structure of the family and the roles of men and women. They simply cannot advance in holiness, both men and women, without following God's providential plan regarding feminine and masculine nature. Again, in cases where the husband cannot supply, or in cases of unmarried women, they may have to work. But for those women who do not have to work, if they do, they will never attain perfection until they start staying at home, raising their children, and observe the laws of God, which cannot be done in daycare, except again for those in which it's truly necessary. Women simply will not become holy until they begin rendering justice to their children. It is that simple. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, Amen.